Welcome to the Dynasty Happy Hour podcast. Pull up a chair and kick up your feet as you get ready to enjoy some of the industry's most entertaining and actionable Dynasty content on the planet. We're talking veterans, rookies, sleepers, and oh yeah, you know the crew has those dad jokes ready for you. So let's not wait any longer and bring on the host or some combination of Doug and Tyler.
Welcome back to the Dynasty Happy Hour. We are here post-combine. We're not going to talk about the combine. You know, you go to many other podcasts right now or your YouTubes, and everyone's about doing mock drafts and post-combine. We'll talk a little bit about it because, let's face it, as a Dynasty podcast, the combine is a large part of what we do. But you know what? We said, you know what? The combine, we got plenty of weeks to talk about it. We were able to secure a guest that Tyler has been wanting to have on the show for a long time. A friend of mine in real life. We are in a couple leagues together. We enjoy Scott Fishbowl together every year. And it is our friend Leo Pisiga. So Tyler, hi, everyone knows you. But Leo, how the hell are you, my friend?
I'm doing great. It's an honor to be here with you guys. And I'm looking forward to spending some time talking about Dynasty and strategy and all the nuances that go along with it. So I appreciate you guys inviting me to the show.
Absolutely. Leo is here to give us his wisdom. I mean, he is, I would say, best known for his notebook and taking notes on the owners in your leagues and then using that to your advantage, which is something that I think Tyler and I have both adopted. I know with Tyler, for instance, if I wait and don't accept his trade, he'll come back and offer me something on top of it. And I just wait because I know Tyler is just going to be like, get impatient. He'd be like, fine, I'll throw in a fourth.
It's not impatient. I just don't want to beat her on the bush. Like, we'll get into it, but I'm not going to sit there and be like, okay, my backup plan is I'll add this player. Then after that, I'll do that. You know what? I'm just going to give him my best offer right up front. I just want to get it done over with. I'm not going to waste any time. I'm not going to waste your time.
Tyler and I are polar opposites. I'm the most patient person in the world, and Tyler is the most impatient.
And we co-owned in a league. Can you imagine?
Oh. Yeah, well, we have a funny story about that later that revolves around a certain Atlanta Falcons tight end. I'm sure we could share with you that it's a fun one. Anywho, I do want to cover some news off the top. Today was franchise tag deadline day. Now, I know everyone, free agency is going to start next week, so I know everyone was hyped. Oh, look at all these wide receivers. And then it's a wet fart noise because it's Calvin Ridley and Gabe Davis and a bag of footballs, really, that are going to be free agents. They'll get overpaid from somebody. But T. Higgins has signed his franchise tag with the Bengals officially. Michael Pittman, same thing with the Indianapolis Colts. So those two stud receivers, young stud receivers, are off the market for now. They could still be traded for a team that needs a receiver. They would obviously have to pay up to acquire them. And we don't see that very often. I think we've seen it maybe once or twice in the history of the franchise tag. Maybe not even. I can't remember. But Saquon Barkley did not get tagged, so he is free to move about the cabin. I'm really going to be interested to see what the running back market looks like on free agency, because this is probably the best free agent running back market that I've ever seen as far as talent goes. And what's the price going to be? You know, the cap went up $30 million, but I don't think the running back market is going to go up. I think it's going to be kind of a struggle for these guys to get $10 or $11 million a year. So I know that's something that we're all interested in, and we'll talk combine too with running backs. But the running back musical chairs is going to be one of the biggest offseason things here in the Dynasty community to keep an eye on. So yeah, franchise tags. We had Russell Wilson getting officially released on March 13th. He can talk to new teams. Very interesting. I actually thought Russell Wilson was decent last year. Leo, what did you think of Russell Wilson last year with Denver?
Thought he was okay. Guess the key component for me with Russell Wilson is with him getting so much money, dead money from the Broncos, it's going to be interesting to see what the price tag is for him to sign with somebody new. Is he willing to really, you know, basically come in at the minimum because he's trying to do something extremely cap friendly for whoever he goes to? I think he's serviceable. I think that the league will tell us exactly what they think of him overall based on how aggressive, how many suitors they have. Because let's face it, if there was another quarterback around his ranking, if you put, where would you put him? Probably around the 15th or 16th best quarterback maybe in the league last year. I saw somebody put him near Carr, I think, and as far as, you know, and so the question is, if he comes in again with such a cap friendly hit when some of these other guys are going for 40 million and he comes in so much under market value, if there is still not a large group of teams banging on the door to take advantage of that financial windfall, it tells you right away that, you know, he's basically on his last ride. There's not much coming. But if you have seven or eight teams that are vying for him to take advantage, it's almost like having a quarterback on a rookie contract, right? All the things you can do with your roster based on what he's going to be charging. And I guess the key component in this, as far as Russ is concerned, is did he, I don't want to say take some humility away from what happened to him in Denver. I mean, I think he handled the situation with as much class as you can based on what he went through. I think in one tweet I said that he kept his chin higher than his high knees because he was trying to, you know, save face, look good, be professional. And he did that. So,
and not potentially penalize himself with a, you know, contract, detrimental to the team, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
I think Russ is owed $36 million from the Broncos this year. So again, yeah. He's a perfect bridge quarterback, year or two quarterback on a inexpensive deal. There's been some chatter on local radio here in Boston about Russ coming to the Patriots if they draft Drake May at 3 and then sitting May for a year or two. And I'm like, oh boy, like there's a lot of options here for the Pats, as you know, Leo, but I think Russ is going to have a suitor. I know some people be like, oh, he's out of the league like Carson Wentz. And I'm like, he had 26 touchdown passes and only 8 picks, a 90 passer rating last year on a team that wasn't that great. Like Russ, I think, is still a serviceable quarterback. Like you said, right in that middle of the pack, quarterback 15. I'd take him over Derek Carr because I think Derek Carr stinks.
Derek Carr was, 37 or 38 million, I think?
Yeah.
So it's crazy to me at the price discount that you can get Russ because of what the Broncos owe him that, you know, I would think that he does make the perfect bridge quarterback, and he definitely should have suitors. But again, the market will dictate, right? Give us a perfect reflection of how NFL GMs and teams feel about what he can contribute based on how aggressively they look to bring him in.
Yeah, and I think the market too, we talked about running backs at the top here, is that I think we're going to see some big name running backs that go past day one, day two, day three of free agency, because it seems to happen every year at the position now. You know, you might find a guy like Austin Eckler, maybe not sign on day one or two, or, you know, a Josh Jacobs. I mean, I would imagine those guys would sign early, but I'm not going to be surprised if there's notable people out there, even Derrick Henry. Like, I know Derrick Henry, like a lot of teams would love to have him, but I think it's going to be a waiting game on this market. And it's like, who's going to be the first one to sign? And then it's going to kind of go from there.
I see the opposite happening. Wide receiver rookie class is deep and it's very good. The running back class is a bunch of athletic specimen guys, but the production in college wasn't quite there. They always split time or they transferred. So I think that we're going to see a lot of these free agent running backs sign for like a 1 or 2 year deal. And it's going to be early. It's going to be quick, like Saquon, Jacobs. I bet Pollard goes quick. I think these guys go quick. And the receivers, like Gabe Davis and Calvin Ridley, are the ones that are going to suffer.
Oh, I don't know. That's an interesting take. It'll be interesting to see what happens with all of that. So, but yeah, I'm looking forward to free agency next week for sure. Now, we were talking combine a little bit. I don't know how much you watch, Tyler. I've watched some of the different highlights, and I watched some of the positional.
I watched a lot of the receiver.
Okay. Leo, did you catch up on any of the combine stuff?
Yeah, not in real time, but I've tried to, you know, follow up on a lot of the speed scores, the 40-yard times. The combine for me is, I don't know, it's almost like icing on a cake. It doesn't, you know, the evals. there you go. The evals should have been, you know, if you are putting in the time and doing the homework, you kind of already know how you feel about a particular player, especially the top end of the rookie class. So to me, you know, I saw a lot of tweets over the weekend about not double counting things that you already know. You know, don't double count a guy who's fat. And it's enjoyable. Sure, I like to watch it. And some of those times were amazing. They came in much, I don't want to say much faster, but they certainly trended higher than or better than we thought, especially with the receivers. The speed was unbelievable. But to me, again, it's just, it doesn't, the most important factor to me is the early evaluations and then where do they land. And this, everything that happens in the middle is just is nice, and we beat it to death and we shout about it from the rooftops. But ultimately now the most important thing is where do they land.
Yeah. So that's a great analogy, by the way, the icing on the cake, because you got those people that just eat the icing. They don't eat the cake. They just eat the icing. So the combine is like they're everything.
They get that
to them.
Sugar rush.
Yes. And they're like, oh, my God, this is it. Brian Thomas, best receiver in the class. Here we go. Woo. And then it happened. Yeah.
For me, it's stage two of the rookie eval, right? So stage one is you watch tape and you see them play in games. Stage two is the combine. So you're going to have guys that rise up in the combine. And then stage three is the NFL draft, where you're going to have guys that, you know, maybe they were originally round four guys and one of them sneaks into round two, like a Tutu Atwell or, you know, one of those guys that goes in the second round, Sky Moore. And then you go, oh, wait a minute. And it changes the values based on the landing spot. For me, the way that I kind of process all of it is like I take all those things into account. But for me, it's all about like, what do my eyes tell me? It's not necessarily, I mean, we saw this when AJ Brown went to the Titans and everyone was off AJ Brown because the landing spot was bad, even though he was a really good player in college. And I think that was one of the biggest learning things for me in Dynasty, is not to fade the landing spot, but still believe in the player. And that's something that I try to do every single year when it comes to rookies, because I know if Xavier Worthy gets picked at the end of the first round by the Kansas City Chiefs, he's going to go up into that 107, 108 ballpark. And I'm not a huge fan of the speedster guys anyway. I know he's got a good breakout age, which is encouraging, you know, compared to like Tyquan Thornton and Darius Hayward Bay and some of these John Rosses of the world. So he does have a little bit more hope than that, that traditional stereotype of receiver. But for me, even if he went with Kansas City, I'm not going to move him, because I'm just not a huge fan of that particular archetype of receiver.
So you're a three-layer cake guy is what you're saying. You got three steps. I mean, we're going to stick on
the whole
this
damn cake.
We're going to stick on this cake analogy right here. We got it started.
I eat the whole damn cake, Tyler.
Okay. You need to go. Now, like you said, you just go layer to layer. Mm-hmm. That's what it is. And then,
Yeah, but we always see this in the Dynasty community. You get this, the rise, and then it rises, and then it rises again. And I think some people may get caught up in the newest information is the only thing that matters, and I'm not that type of person. And the way that I try to have people strategize around Dynasty is don't get caught up in the shiny new thing. Like, take the whole cake into account. Tell me how the cake was, how the filling was, how the icing was, and how the actual cake itself was. Don't tell me just about the icing or just the filling. Like, I want to know about the whole thing.
So,
and that's kind of my mentality.
One question, then we'll move on to the trading thing. What is one player that you like caught your eye and went up your draft board? I was high on Ladd McConkey, and watching his gauntlet, he might be my receiver four now. Like, he's up there. His gauntlet was one of the best gauntlets I've ever seen. I don't think he stepped off that line.
Fast. He was a 4-4.
And the transition was smooth. His hands were soft. And it was perfect in my eyes. Like, his straight line. And Brian Thomas was very close, too, because he was on a straight line. But McConkey was just like, that was a perfect gauntlet, in my opinion. Faller, Troy Franklin. Sorry, James. I know you like him. But Troy Franklin, his gauntlet was... It was like an EKG of a heartbeat. It was just all over the place. He couldn't stay in the line.
The gauntlet's a drill they run through twice. Again, you
he
watch
did it
what
twice.
Does, you, I know, but you watch what he does in games, and he's productive. He runs routes. He's not. He's a good player. At least he was in college. So for me, it's like the gauntlet is, you're not running in a straight line catching balls like that in an NFL game. So it's something that's out of character for these receivers to do. It's not like he practices like running a straight line and we're going to throw balls at you, you know, eight times. Like, that's just not
For routes, it matters.
Right. But he's running a straight line looking left and right. Like, you only have one ball to catch and focus on.
So you're telling me when he looks left and on the field, he's going to start going right into the middle of the field.
Right, but the tape doesn't show you that, is what I'm trying to say. So don't put too much stock in the fact that he can't run in a straight line looking left and right at 18 miles an hour. Like, to me, it's like, I get it. Like, the visual is like, ew. But there's been players that have had not great gauntlets, and they've been perfectly fine in the NFL. So
yeah, Michael Thomas.
I don't put too much stock into it. Leo, who you got for a riser and a faller out of the combine?
Well, I actually agree with Tyler from the standpoint of Ladd. I think that he really flashed, right? I mean, looked far smoother to me than, I mean, I always knew that he had a wide fundamental base as far as what he could do, but he looked far more fluid than I thought he was going to. Very smooth. It was impressive. What I would say about Franklin, because I like Franklin, I watched his, I'm from a film perspective, I was impressed. Mm-hmm. And what I want to go back and look at now is the way he ran the gauntlet. It didn't seem strong to me from a, I don't want to say muscular perspective, because that's not right. It didn't look from a aggressive perspective where he attacked the ball. He seemed to react to the catch and to the momentum that he ended up having, you know, how he was impacted as he was running through the catch. It seemed to throw him off. But what I saw when I watched the film is that he was strong at the line of scrimmage. Some of his initial steps and his hand motions coming off the line were of a wide receiver who's more powerful than his build would display. So to me, there was a contradiction between the strength I saw through the gauntlet and what I saw off the line of scrimmage. So something like that now is going to make me go back and look at that and actually pull on some analysis or some evals from some other folks that I respect in the industry to say, okay, did I miss something? Did I overvalue what I saw in the film, or am I giving too much credence to what I saw in the gauntlet? Because I do think that they need to be weighed appropriately, and I don't know if I'm doing that right now.
Right.
Yeah, and with his build, he's what, 173, 6'1". It's like Devonta Smith style numbers. So Devonta Smith, we knew he was a nuanced route runner. He could get open in many ways. Troy Franklin, I haven't dug really deep into his film. From what I've seen, is it's a lot of burner stuff, but I've heard that he can also kind of dictate routes by his speed. He knows how to use his speed. So his route running, I think, is going to be under a microscope for me, because if he's that size, I need to know that he can do that, and that gauntlet scared me.
Yeah. One thing I will say about Franklin that I saw is that he's able to, he reads defenders really well, their momentum. He's able to use that against them. But the other thing he notices is he can find holes in a zone. He can exaggerate and take advantage of the space created through just motion on the field around him. He finds where those windows are. So I was impressed by him. But again, the combine now, I'm certainly not going to throw my original evaluation out the window, but it's enough now for a second look. And I think that's important. I think I was going to say that one of the things that I do differently now, because I'm not in that many, you know, I don't do any dynasty right at the moment. And at one time I was in 30 leagues, and a lot of them drafted early. So I Yep. had to do my own evals because I had to be ready, because some of them drafted before the NFL draft. So what I would do is I would do my own evals, and then I would use people that I trust in what they do, and I would go back and look to see, okay, do they see what I see? Now I do it the opposite way. Now I don't invest that much time early on. I go and watch later, and then I look to see, okay, now that I'm looking later, do they see what I see? So it's a complete different, I flipped the lens completely as to how much detail I put into some of the work early on.
I'm the same way right now, Leo. I used to like start in December, and I would be kind of burnt out by this time. Mm-hmm. And now I, you know, we do our rookie evals week to week. And I will, that whole week, I'm nose into the film, watching everything on these prospects. I watch a little here and there right now, but I get everything that week. So it's fresh. And like some guys like Zach Reed, I'll listen to get a perspective of who smaller school guys I should watch. I know Doug and I, we listen to JJ Zacharyson, and he kind of goes deep into the small school guys. And also the combine shows us small school guys that we should go look at, which is the biggest thing in my opinion. Like, oh, this guy ran a 4.3 something. I need to look into him.
Yeah. Yeah, like the running back that ran the 4.33 there that a lot
from
of people
Louisville, yeah.
Pacheco. Yeah, like he's a guy that wasn't even Garendo, he wasn't even on my radar, and now I'm
he's
like,
as old as you.
Yeah. The oldest running 45-year-old running back. Very
45-year-old combine running back.
I will give you just a couple names real quick and then we'll move on. For me watching the combine, I was already kind of out on Keon Coleman, and Florida State's my college team. I was already kind of out on. I had concerns around Keon Coleman, and then he ran over a 4.6, which I was like, supposed athletic freak, and I was like, oh, this is not
but
good.
But Doug, he ran 20 miles an hour in the gauntlet.
I think he did that because he was like, I did not run fast. I need to do something.
But
like,
he was smooth in the gauntlet too.
He was. I think Keon Coleman, you know, originally people thought he'd be like end of the first round. I think he probably goes in the second to a team still.
Yes.
I still have concerns around Keon Coleman. I think, you know, when we were talking like what do these mocks look like, he was usually end of the first round, and then we've seen him start to slide in mocks to like mid-second. Now he's probably like that middle end of the second. So it'll be interesting to see where his draft stock is based on that. You know, I think he's got potential, but I just his particular – hype. I guess I have a little too much PTSD from the N'Keal Harrys of the world. You know, the guys that might struggle to separate a little bit. And Keon Coleman.
Laquan Treadwell.
Yeah. Corey Coleman's like, I just have heebie-jeebies around those type of guys. And I think Keon gives me those, like Quentin Johnston last year. You know, I wasn't on him at all. I got him in one league because I was like, well, in case he hits, I'll have him in one league out of the 12 I'm in. It was one of those YOLO moments, which hasn't worked out yet, but there's still time.
Yeah. And it like, The combine, I think, like you guys said, don't double count, but it also brings play. Like, Rome Odunze was falling for some odd reason. Like, oh, he's not fast. He's unathletic.
That was my riser. And I know he can't rise really much higher than, you know, wide receiver three in this class. But I think a lot of people now, you've heard whispers of, like, you know, with neighbors because he didn't do anything. So Odunze is the hot name in the streets all of a sudden. I don't think he's better than neighbors. But for me, Odunze was a guy that I was like, I like his game. But, like, seeing the metrics, the work ethic and the things that he was doing, I was like, and hearing the story of like, you know, how he had like broken ribs and then he drove 22 hours because he couldn't fly. Like, that reminds me of this Jacoby Brissett story of like him driving everywhere to games. And I forget what it was for, but he just loves the game and he'll do anything he can to be on the field. And it's a cool story, but those are the low key, those are the kind of guys that you want. Like, you want those guys that are going to put in the extra effort. You know, that as Tyler would say, bring their lunch pail and all that.
Well, that's Ladd. That's Ladd McConnell. Like, come on, let's get real. Ladd is the lunch pail. First one in, last one out. Patriot style receiver. Oh, Wes Welker, Julian Edelman. I mean, we're all thinking it.
Danny Woodhead. Insert any Caucasian offensive player here.
Danny Woodhead. You know, the funny thing is Ladd is a different, he's different than what we've seen from the Caucasian receivers.
Yeah, that is very, very true. So, yeah, so those are a couple names for me. It was Rome, and then it was Keon Coleman was the one I was like, I wasn't double counting it. I thought he was going to run like in the 4.4s.
Yeah, you were worried about him. So,
but I was already worried about separation, and then to not see the speed, I was like, that's concerning. So,
yeah, we'll get deeper into the combine and the prospects at a later date, but let's get into the meat and potatoes of this episode.
Yeah, absolutely. So, Leo, it's a joy to have you on. I've known you for a handful of years now, and always pleasant to talk to you and your son at Scott Fishbowl, and we have the Beantown Brawl Draft that we do with Kevin O'Brien, the FF engineer, for those familiar with him on Twitter, and that's a lot of fun as well. Give us a little history of how you got started in fantasy football and in the dynasty space. Cause I know you've been around for a while, but I don't know how long you've been around for.
A lot longer than I like to admit.
Same.
So I started in the mid-80s, started playing fantasy football, had a friend that was, had a brother who worked for a brokerage firm up in Boston, and they started doing it around 80. They might have started in 84, and then we got brought in 86, I think it was. And I always say that I remember drafting Kurt Warner early, and not the guy that played quarterback.
The Seahawks running back
from Penn State, right?
I did not even know this. So
yeah,
it's Kurt with a C, by the way.
Yeah,
it's black and white film. Is that what I go look at?
Pretty close. They had leather helmets.
Leather helmets, yeah.
There goes Kurt Warner with a 4-yard sweep around the edge.
Yeah, so when I started, it was USA Today. It was facts, results, faxed out to, you know, to the league mates, and trading done through, you know, just
phone calls.
Yeah. Telegram. Rotary dial
phone calls. Pete Davidson, paging Pete Davidson. That's totally him.
Yeah. So it was interesting, and it was a lot of fun. And then I got into Dynasty probably around 2000, I think it was. Okay. And got in over my head. I would say for probably 15 years, I probably played in over 30 leagues. And, you know, online, just the online sites changed everything, you know, from it just being a local group of friends at a bar or a community that all knew each other to, you know, floodgates wide open. What does it look like? It basically put fantasy football on the coffee table of every family in America if they wanted it, based on internet access and sites, whether it was ESPN, whether it was CBS Sports.
The divorce rates are. Once that happened,
right? whether MF, I can't remember when my fantasy league came on board. You know,
early, I think MFL, because I my first dynasty league was with MFL, and my first ever rookie draft pick was Sean Alexander, and they were around a couple years before that. So I want to say since like 2000-ish, early 2000s, and I remember drafting Ryan Matthews was one of my first ones in the year or two after that too. Yeah, with one team.
Yeah. So, and, you know, and like I said, it was hot and heavy early, just a lot of leagues. And I learned a lot because, you know, redraft mentality kind of was the prominent thought for me when I first joined Dynasty. I wasn't really all that familiar with it and focused on a winning 1 or 2 years right out of the gate instead of building a team that was something that could sustain itself. So, you know, that's really where the notebook really originated, in looking at redraft league mates in person and just dotting down some notes. But it really came into full fruition when I started evaluating myself, because I wasn't very good at Dynasty early on, because I really didn't understand the trajectory that I needed for roster builds. So it was really grown out of, what do I need to do better? Where are these failings? Where are these decisions that I'm making failing? How, you know, is the process right, but the decision, the player that I picked wrong, or is it flawed? Is the strategy flawed? So that's really where, you know, I started exercising that muscle memory to kind of track things. And one thing led to another, and I started tracking a lot of the league mates, and there was a lot of repetition in the fact that if I had a particular league mate in one league, I might have that same league mate in four other leagues.
Yep.
So what worked in one league easily translated to the other three leagues as far as nuanced and habits and how they approach their strategy. And so starting to track all that just made a lot of sense. And then I just got to a point where I whittled it down from 30 leagues to, you know, 15 to 10 to 5, and just got to a point where it was like, okay, I just need to take a little bit of a break and be a spectator for a while. I still like to create content. I still like to talk strategy. But as far as executing, you know, and managing a team right now, the only thing I'm doing right now is Scott Fishbowl. But I think at some point in the near future, as I start to build out more content creation and get involved in some more stuff, I'll dive back in a little bit.
Now, my question for you is, so you started in the dynasty space. How many years did it take for you to kind of have the, like, I mean, you said you started the notebook in redraft.
Mm-hmm.
And you carried that over into the dynasty space. Was it something that you immediately adopted in the dynasty space, or was it a little bit of a delay because you wanted to like figure out like your core strategies before you started to figure out everyone else? Like, you wanted to evaluate yourself before evaluating everyone else.
Yeah. So that's really what I did, because again, I wasn't confident in any of the strategies I was trying to execute. You know, I didn't find what really worked for me. So a lot of it was introspective, looking at what I was doing. The other component to this was, it was much easier to build a notebook when I was dealing with 11 other managers in a room with me. That was, you know, the information source was right there. I was able to parse data right from that room, and coming to grips with what that looked like, as the Dynasty Notebook morphed, you know, what does it look like when you're dealing with online leagues and you don't have... Now, the nice piece, I will add, that they don't do it anymore, but my fantasy league used to have a feature where you could put in someone's username and it would show you all their leagues. So if as long as I knew what their either their email was or their username was, I was able, you know, like their team name, like I could put their team name in from my league and see if they used the same team name somewhere else or okay. email. And I was able to see. So if I was in a league with one particular manager and I was in no other leagues with that manager that I knew of, I could still plug their information in and see the other eight leagues they were in, even if I wasn't in them. And I could still kind of, okay, have they made any trades in the last, you know, 3 months? Are they active? Have they disappeared? Are they looking to acquire running backs? Are they looking to acquire draft picks? What are they doing to kind of get an idea of, so the information was pretty readily available. Then as privacy policies got tighter and they started, mm-hmm. you know, just doing away with a lot of that stuff.
So we have you to blame for that.
Probably.
So people complain like, hey, Leo screwed me over in a trade again.
He's peeping at my team. I don't know how he knows that I have Sam LaPorta in 90% of my teams, but he knows.
Right. So that's very possible. But and then it just became more along the lines of instead of particular players managers were rostering or trade windows, it just started keeping track of strategies that they were trying to implement. And where it morphed to at the end was, who do they listen to? What sites are they following? What message boards are they part of? You know, if somebody used an anonymous handle, it wasn't as easy to you know, track that. But if I knew somebody was a huge fan of your podcast or a huge fan of Podfather or right, or they listen to JJ or they listen to Matthew Berry, whoever they happen to listen to, and they talked about it, then it was okay. Well, if they're promoting a certain trade, a certain target, a certain sell, if I know they listen to that podcast or they're active in that message board,
you can lean on that.
Yeah. Yep. Absolutely.
So for me, it always seemed like I was the same way. I started in 2011. I didn't have a strategy. I just went in and I wanted players I liked. And then, like the trading aspect, I didn't start kind of adapting until like 2015 when I started realizing that those traits you're talking about, like what kind of attracted them to a trade, some home leagues. The kind of the reason why I wanted to pick your brain is like leagues are completely different. Home leagues, industry leagues, even half and half leagues. Like Doug and I, we're in a league where it's half my friends from home and like half of industry people. And trades are different. Like first round picks, some people think that no matter what, they're going to hit on them. So they're valued way too high. I was in a league like that and I traded for first round picks. And then I realized, hey, if I trade my first round pick, I can get an elite talent. And that's what kind of switched. And at first, like with the leagues, I was in maybe three or four, and then I grew to like 18. And that's when I started being like, okay, I need to start writing this stuff down because I don't remember this. And like, I'll sit there with a trade with somebody. I'm like, okay, what is this person like? And I swear it's something. And then I'll go through it and I was completely wrong. And then all of a sudden the trade's done. They don't want to trade with you because you kind of got it wrong. You got the wrong person. And, so dwindling down to a certain amount of leagues, I'm in 9 now, and I think that's perfect. It allowed me to kind of hone everything in and realize, okay, I'm trading with this guy. He's going to be tougher. Like in home leagues with me, they know I have a podcast. It's going to be a lot tougher for me to trade with people now.
Yep.
So if I want somebody and I believe in that somebody, I'm going to have to give a little bit extra. Mm-hmm. And it's just little nuanced things like that make you a better dynasty player and realize like you still have a lot to learn in this whole trading aspect.
Yeah. The value for me at the end of all the years and all the experience, the value for me at the end was the why behind the moves. And I talk about that on the pod that I do with Kevin Coleman. We get into the reasons behind the strategy application. So if I want to make a trade, it's not so much, what did that other manager need to get the trade completed. It's why did I want to make the trade? And I like to write those notes down because I want to know what motivated me. What was the reason behind, you know, did I think that by acquiring this particular player, that was going to be, you know, the final piece for my roster? Did I have a plan to flip that player down the road? The reasoning behind it matters to me. And so by writing
I'm laughing because my book would just be covered in because I felt like trading. Well, because I felt like trading.
But that's okay. There's nothing wrong with that. Because, I mean, what works for me might not necessarily work for somebody else, right?
So, yeah, and it depends on the league that you're in, too. I mean, there's leagues that I'm in where I feel comfortable with my roster and I'm not looking to trade. But there's, like, for instance, Tyler and I are in an industry league that we've been in for a while now, the UDPL, with a lot of really sharp managers. And for me, it was taking a long, realistic look at that roster and being like, all right, I'm middle of the pack. My team's injured. I've got a lot of pieces that can be good for other teams. So I'm going to start to to rototill it over and move some of my older players for younger players. And I traded a lot this year. Uncharacteristic for me.
I thought I had his team. That's how it felt like. I was like, I don't have access to his team, but all these trades are happening with his team.
Yeah, and I was, and a lot of it is very league specific too. And it was actually refreshing because I was out of my comfort zone, because that's not typically usually I'm like, you know what, I like this team, I can still compete. And then I was like, you know what, I'm gonna do something different.
You saw me waving you over. Come on, Doug. Yeah. Come on over
to the dark side.
It's the same thing when you take over like an orphan team, like I did in Bartab, which Tyler's also in. I took over the worst team in the league, and then I sucked for 3 years. And it finally came full circle, and I won the league this year because it's an auction league, so I saved a ton of money. I made some good moves. I got lucky with a few players. But that was one where I was like, I usually am a win-now type of dynasty owner. Like, I want to build a team. I want to win as fast as I can. But this one was, I'm going to take this team over and do something completely different. And when it comes to the notebook, to bring that all back, it's a tight end premium league, and I was able to – realize that if I build up a roster of tight ends, like I picked up Darren Waller for no money, and I had David Njoku and all these guys, Hunter Henry, and I was able to sell these pieces off, and those pieces were able to get me Jamar Chase in the auction, CeeDee Lamb, guys that I've spent money on, because the tight ends were going for stupid money. And tight end, I've always kind of been the guy that's finding the diamond in the rough, the tight end position, and it paid off in that league. And that's one of the things that you make the notes, and then you find the managers that are looking for tight ends that are going to pay for them. And then you sell them that tight end, and you sit on that money, and you build up this Scrooge McDuck pile of wealth. And then you finally use it when the time is right. And for me, that was the 2020 season when Jonathan Taylor was a rookie, and guys like that. And that's when I kind of cashed those chips and then started to push all in and finally won the title this year.
It's a good transition to talk about how kind of involving yourself and talking to people that trade differently is a good thing. Doug and I, we co-own a team, and we are, like we said, completely opposite ends of the spectrum. And I learned from this trade, but I'm an Atlanta Falcons fan. I loved Kyle Pitts, and we sat, 104 or 105, and we wanted Jamar Chase. So we took Chase, and we had an option to trade up to the next pick. Now, we're going back and forth, and we didn't have too much of a tight end. We had Dawson Knox, and I told Doug, I said, I want Kyle Pitts. And we went back and forth. I had to text Doug about it, and we went back and forth, and I hit accept on a trade without consulting Doug, and it didn't work out that well. I mean, rookie year it did.
But I didn't want to do the trade, for the record, and then I got really pissed off at Tyler because he decided to accept
but
it.
But I actually learned from that trade, because failing on that trade, because this is what I'm going to get into. Failing at trades actually makes you a better trader. Don't be scared of pulling the trigger with trades because you're afraid you're going to lose. It's when you do lose a trade that you'll learn from it, and that trade actually helped me learn from it. It made me realize, like, hey, you can't jump the gun on things. A time will come. There's a buy low option possibly in the future. And for me, that was big for me, because I was very trigger happy before that. I always did trades. It was like every other week I did a trade, maybe even every week. And ever since then, I've actually been okay with like the slow burn of trade talks of the, okay, we're kind of at a fork in the road. Let's talk about it tomorrow. Let's clear our minds. Like, I was never that person. I'm always like, hey, let's get back to this. We got to do this.
Oh, the text. Do you think about that trade yet? What about that trade?
Yes.
What about that trade? And then I would just ignore Tyler, and then I'd get an offer with something else on top of it. And I was like, done.
And I've actually learned from that because of somebody that is different than me with trading. And I actually enjoyed the time being a co-owner. Yeah, we're not as active in it, but that's okay. That's also a good thing because you let people come to you sometimes instead of you being the giddy person at, you know, Black Friday sale, and you jump in the line to get that TV when you realize the TV is going on sale in a week anyway.
Or I could just order it online.
Yes, or order it online. And yeah, for me, that was a huge change in my trading aspect as well, because man, I think I made 10 trades in every league, maybe in 2
weeks.
You're known
in every league that I'm in as the one that trades the most.
Oh yeah. And also when you're trading, don't be scared to make a big trade. Like, I traded Calvin Ridley for Achan week one this past year. It looked ridiculous to some people. They're like, oh my God, you lost it. Just because you lost a trade week one doesn't mean you lost it week 8, week 9. Like, believe in your evaluation.
Leo, in part of your notebooks, so one of the things that kind of leads into is timing, because we all know in Dynasty that the values are like the stock market. They can change from week to week. So are you proactive when you were looking at your rosters and being like, all right, this player just had a big week, I don't necessarily believe they can sustain it? Were you proactively trying to move players or updating your trade bait, or were you more like aggressive, or were you more passive when it came to your dynasty history around trades?
Yeah. So first thing I want to say is that Tyler's maturation, right, through the trading process, learning, mm-hmm. that's awesome. I say a lot, you can probably put it on my tombstone, a miss is not a failure. A miss only becomes a failure if you marinate in it. Then it becomes a failure. But a miss that you pivot and move on is exactly that, a learning experience. As far as windows and trade bait and how proactive I was, I think a key to being a good dynasty manager is being engaged and being active. And parsing data as it becomes available, whether that's training camp news, whether that's injury news. Again, knowing your league mates matters, because if you have someone that's extremely risk averse and all of a sudden there's some off-field issues that affect a particular player, or you have someone that absolutely loves to buy risk, all those things come into play.
Tyler.
And you, but you have
I love
to,
it. I love it.
Risk at a discount is wonderful if you're open.
Oh, again, he bought Tyreek Hill in multiple leagues when there was the whole like
second
domestic
rounder
thing.
I bought Jordan
Aaron
Love.
Hernandez. So let's, you know,
I bought Jordan Love when everybody said he sucked. Yeah. I was all about that. Justin Herbert.
Sean
when everybody's
Watson
like,
was
he's
another
terrible.
One that you bought into.
Yeah, still I mean, am.
Yeah. I know.
So. But that's, again, part of your style. And as long as you don't, if you miss, you pivot and you go in a different direction, that there's value right in that. And again, it fits your personality. If you're comfortable with, I always tell people, play with what you're comfortable with. Build your strategy to that, because this is supposed to be fun. And if you're in a constant state of anxiousness because you're not comfortable with how you're playing, it's not going to be fun. So play the way that you enjoy, build your strategy around that. You don't have to stick to one lane, but stick to that highway if that's what you're comfortable doing, right? But yeah, so be engaged, parse the data as soon as it becomes available, evaluate it. So one of the things that I really like to do, and I'm a big proponent of, especially this time of year, because you have the time, because you're not managing week to week, and dynasty doesn't really become redraft until the season starts and you're in season trying to manage it. This is the perfect time to have what I call a variance spreadsheet. And what that is you have rankings in a vacuum. Rankings in a vacuum are fine, but contextual rankings are worth so much more. So what I like to do is build a spreadsheet. And I talked about it again on the pod with Kevin, is I build a spreadsheet with vacuum rankings. Then there's a collaboration of just a consensus, whatever sites you're comfortable with, Football Guys, DLF, CBS, ESPN, whoever that is, wherever you get your rankings from, whether like I like Ryan McDowell's mock drafts that DLF grabs the startup data on.
Yep.
But you get enough of those so you have a consensus. And then what is the contextual component to what you're trying to do? So I'll have a column for rebuilding and I'll have a column for title chasing. And those rankings aren't the same. Tyreek Hill is much higher in a ranking system where I'm looking to win a title than in a ranking system where I'm 2-3 years away.
Yeah.
So those contextual factors matter. You build the rankings for that because it helps you to be more in the moment ready for news that changes, a spike in value, right? The whole idea is you're trying to mitigate loss and you're trying to capitalize on variance. So capitalizing on variance is easier when you can visually see that variance in the moment. So to me, again, that's an important factor if you're trying to take advantage of a spike or a dip, or just again, knowing if your rankings for rebuilding a team, you have a particular player much higher because it's a rebuilding component to this. Look for the teams in your league that are rebuilding, because chances are they rank that player similarly to how you've got them ranked.
Yep.
And if it's not the consensus, but it's because of rebuilding, then see if you can flip it, especially if you're ready for title chasing. So long-winded answer, but yes, I think that it's very important that you take advantage of pockets. Post-combine is a great pocket to take advantage of because of the – you're going to have increases in rookie picks at certain times. It's critical to have rookie picks to be draft active. You want to have chips in the game because you want to be draft active. I think that's very important, even if your goal is to trade them away, because you would rather have a tested, proven NFL player that's already got a year or two under their belt. You still want to capitalize on the spike. So, yes, it's important. Pay attention. Capitalize on windows. I break the season into four windows, like every four games. Capitalize, make adjustments. Know when your league's trading windows are. Some leagues trade, go bananas right at the draft. Some leagues see an increase in volume at the combine. Some see an increase in value 3 weeks before the playoffs start. It all depends on those windows are. Be prepared to take advantage of
My favorite thing to do is if there's an inactive league, make a small trade. Like, I mean, it doesn't seem small now, but for me, it was trade for Kyren Williams his rookie year when he was nothing. Make a small trade, just a small trade of a player that you like, but that should pick up some steam in the league. Like, people will see that and be like, oh, okay, well, maybe I should look.
The juice is flowing a little bit.
Yeah, maybe I should look deeper into that. And also another thing, don't be scared to trade your pick because those are assets that you get every year. Like, it's not like you trade a pick away and you're never getting a pick again. You get those picks refreshed every year. Now, also for me, it was learning when those picks are, at their highest price. Before, I would trade it in season. That's it. I'm done. Now, what I've learned throughout the years is maybe wait.
Definitely wait.
So, and being on the clock also is huge. Don't be scared to trade up and get your guy like Doug did with Laporta this year. And my last thing for Leo, my last question is trade calculators. This is a big topic. Do you use them? And how do you use them?
No, I don't.
If you use them,
no, I don't use them. I don't. So trading is a muscle memory. The more you do it, the more comfortable you get with it. The more you learn how to assign values. Well, you learn how to assign values yourself, really, to And again, context matters. I preach it constantly. How your league scoring impacts player values. Trade calculators don't take any of that into account. They don't take into account league activity. They don't, any system that you can beat because you throw in 17 third rounders and all of a sudden it equals, you know, an A-list player, it's broken conceptually. If that, you know, and I think there's value in it, again, because people who don't trade a lot or people who don't have a ton of dynasty experience, that is a great,
yeah, they don't know the markets
board. Right,
yeah.
It's a great proof of concept. I'm putting together this trade. Am I going to get laughed out of here by the other manager because this is just ridiculous? It gives them a point of reference. That's important. But I do think once you develop that muscle and you learn to assign values yourself, and you do your own rankings, I think that it loses its value and it can almost work as a detriment because it talks you into things that you know probably aren't going to get the deal done. Mm-hmm. Because, well, if the trade calculator validates it, I can add four third rounders and it's going to make this happen because total wise, they're close. And deep down, right, you know, that's not really the case.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, I was going to say, I think the thing with trade calculators, once we saw people, you know, redraft is a largely casual fan base, you know, like office leagues and things like that. The amount of players that play redraft are mostly casual. And I think we've start to see some of those casual redraft people kind of tip their toe into Dynasty. And I think it's a really good tool for, again, people that don't know the markets. They're not familiar with, you know, how values work. I use a trade calculator not as to build a trade. Like, I'll have a trade and I'll send it out and then I'll go into the trade calculator to look at it and see if I was like close. And usually I'm pretty spot on. Like, I have a pretty good idea of what the market's going to bear when it comes to player values. So I use it as more or less like a guide. And it's one of those things, like if you are sending a trade offer to one of those more casual dynasty managers, and if they're like, oh, I don't know, you know, you can send them like a quick screenshot and be like, hey, it's actually in your favor a little bit, like, or it's in my favor a little bit. Here's why, and add more context to it. You can use it in a tool that way. I never use it as a like, oh, I need to build this trade with this calculator, but I use it more of like a validation of my own process to like confirm that like I'm in the ballpark. You know, I feel like I never send like an offensive trade, and I know I've received them in leagues I'm in where I'm like, who put this together? Like, it's like an instant reject, like just ridiculous trades. We all get those, but you know, for me, it's a guide.
I just think you have to be really careful when you send a screenshot because it really needs to be one of those players that don't have lot of experience. Because I'll tell you right now, if I ever got a screenshot saying it's close, the notebook comment that I would write would be scathing because I would, you know, wait a minute, I don't like the trade.
Do you think you're an idiot?
Now you're sending me this for justification. So I do think you do have to be a little careful and know your
audience.
Yeah,
only when a manager would be like, yeah, I don't know, I don't see the value. And that's when I might be like, okay, like you value this player more than I do. Like, yeah. And that's okay. Like, I don't push. Like, I'm not a pusher. Like, if you want to stay, you love Drake London more than I do, and I can I'm trying to overpay for him and you won't budge, that's fine. Like, I get that. Yeah. I've been like that.
Or you've identified that they use it themselves, like they've used it in a trade to you and you've notated that, so that if you know they use it and they're comfortable with it, then absolutely. Then it's a tool to help validate because that's in their comfort zone. So I get that. But if they don't use it, the last thing you ever want to do is reference it.
You nailed it, Leo, because it was probably 2 years ago. A good friend of mine that's actually in a league with Doug, Jason, I didn't realize he used Dynasty Trade Calculator's calculator until one day he sent me a screenshot and he goes, hey, we're like five things off. And instantly my mind goes, bingo. I can now relate to this through future trades and get close to a deal done. Like I value Amon-Ra St. Brown closer to Jamar Chase, and we were talking trades and I'm like, hey, you know, Chase is greater valued than Amon-Ra. And he's kind of catching on to the aspect of like, hey, you know, I'm going to hang on to my guys and I know what you're trying to do here. But I love that aspect of it. Or if you're training with Izzy Alcafasa of Dynasty Trade Calculator, you can be like, why didn't you accept this? Your own tool says you're winning in this trade.
I didn't make those values.
Yeah. And the one tool I will never use, I know a lot of people go to it, is Keep Trade Cut. Those are pretty much like voted for values. Mm-hmm. Like that's how they get their values. It's like, oh, who do you want? Here you go. Now we put up on
our
site.
There's way too many variables with that.
But I know plenty of people who love them, though.
Who I agree.
Refer to them as the gospel almost.
Yep.
And again, write it in your notebook and make note of that, because then you can use that as a tool to, you know, get some leverage possibly. So I got one more question for you, Leo.
I got plenty of time, so let it run as long as you want.
Awesome. So you talked a lot about using the notebook. Now, is that, and making the notebook, is that something that you would set aside time to do, or was it just fluid as you got time and you were free and you're like, you know what, I'm going to sit down for a little bit, look at these leagues, or was it dedicated, like, all right, I'm going to sit down for an hour on this day and like, and look through this stuff. Like,
or
how
spur
did you,
of the moment.
But yeah, how did you attack it? Was it something that was just like Tyler said, spur of the moment, or was it like, I'm going to block out this time and work on it during this time?
Yeah. So it changed over the years, honestly, you know, especially when it was more about evaluating myself and teaching myself how to be a better dynasty player.
I just look in the mirror and yell at myself. So don't need a notebook for that, Leo.
If only I had known to do that, it would have saved me. So I could get so many years back.
You stupid.
But, you know, so then it was more like it was therapeutic. It was almost like, okay, I need to sit down and do this. Kind of like, you know, driving a car, the more hours you put into it, you become an expert. What is it? 10,000 hours at anything you become an expert at. So as you get better at doing anything, you start to shave off certain things. Early on, I tracked a lot of stuff. I tracked free agent, blind bid waivers, who was dropping in full amounts the first week of the season. Kind of learned how aggressive to be in blind bid waivers. And what ended up happening was, again, I started to learn what the value was. Was it worth putting in that amount of time to gain that small insight? And I started to scale back. And at the end, I didn't record as much simply because I didn't see the value in it. So it morphed over time based on what I really was trying to accomplish with it. And I started to learn, you know, I had categories and focused on trade negotiations primarily at the end. And what did that look like? And again, the reasons became really important for me at the end. Why did I initiate that dialogue? Why did I think that this trade was going to work? Why did I implement this strategy? You know, I talked about it with Kevin on the pod about, you know, if you wanted to execute a strategy, zero running back, or you wanted to go with some other strategy, whether you wanted to have, you know, punt your first 2 years of a startup, whatever that progressive struggle strategy, whatever that looked like, what was the reason behind it? And why did you pick specific players to execute that strategy? And then that way to see, was it broken because the strategy was flawed? Well, what if I had picked player C instead of player A? Would that strategy have worked? Was it really flawed with the player selection? And that helped me kind of fine tune, you know, just what I was trying to execute. I will share one quick story. And I think this just goes kind of ties everything together about evaluating yourself and changing and maturing in the game and trying to improve your whole process. I have a thread that I tweeted out a while back that talks about one of the things I learned when I finally got good at playing Dynasty was to basically focus on young wide receivers in a startup and always prioritize upcoming youth over established vets. And I was pretty successful with that. You know, the results showed that that was a fairly positive strategy to implement and was worth doing. But a lot of the conversations I was getting into with certain folks, either on Twitter or, you know, any other social media or in message boards and some of my leagues, is that there was a group of folks that always preferred the more established vets than the young up-and-comers. And the perfect example of this, and the one I refer to in the thread, is T.Y. Hilton versus Dante Moncrief. I was all in on Moncrief because based on what I saw...
Oh, you're singing Tyler's tune. We have both officially died, now three of us, on the Dante Moncrief Hill.
But so that was where my investment was. And it wasn't just him. It was players like that. They finished the year strong, target share. What did they do with their with the amount of targets they got.
Tied to a good quarterback.
Right, all of that. And, you know, the next step is for him to go from a, you know, wide receiver three to a wide receiver. He's going to make the leap from a wide receiver three to a wide receiver one at 1B. And, yep, and be invested on the younger side of the equation, Alshon Jeffries, as opposed to Brandon Marshall. Same type of scenario. And, you know, having those conversations with some of these folks that were adamant about the fact that these established vets still had some runway left in their career, and sure, that I would be more in a better position to have a more productive 3-year window than automatically siding on the younger up and coming positional player time after time. I started to track that. I started to say, okay, in this particular instance, I'm going with Moncrief. What would it look like if I had kept Hilton or I had invested in Hilton? What would the results have been? And I started to track that over, you know, year over year for a good, you know, 3 years. And what I found was that my process wasn't good, and that I would have benefited even more. Even though I was successful, I would have been more successful if I had invested in the established player. So it kind of changed my whole approach, where I thought I was done evolving as a dynasty manager and I had the cheat code that worked. And I'm not saying there's a blanket cheat code. You have to pivot all the time. Sure. To once you layer it with context and take advantage of where the variances are. But as a general rule of thumb, whatever it is you like to execute and try to use as your foundational strategy, mine was flawed. And so I changed how I approached the game and how I valued players. And I had to kind of rethink the whole Rubik's Cube because it was broken. But I wouldn't have ever realized that if I hadn't actually written it down and seen it visually on, you know, on a spreadsheet or a piece of paper, because in my mind, I was successful enough and that's all that really mattered.
Yeah, I think we've talked about stuff like that on the pod here with especially around the running back position. Like, we always make the kind of the joke is that, like, once a running back hits the RB1 in Dynasty, it's time to sell. And that was me with Bijan last year. Like, he was a rookie, never even touched the NFL field. Then he was the Dynasty RB1. And I'm like, he's never going to exceed this value. He may stay there for a year or two, but I mean, we've seen it in the past with guys like Todd Gurley and Derrick Henry and Austin Eckler. Typically the years after, I mean, CMC is probably the exception to the rule. And Gurley did get 2 years where he was like the RB1. And then obviously, I mean, he's still under 30 years old and he hasn't played in like 2 years now, which is wild to me. But the running back position is one that I have stopped investing a lot of draft capital in. And I'm perfectly fine going with, you know, drafting handcuffs, because a lot of times they're getting on the field. Like, I mean, if you invested in Miles Sanders last year, like, and had Chuba Hubbard, like, you're starting Chuba Hubbard every week because he was the one that was getting the playing time. If you had Jerome Ford on your roster, like, there's just so many instances at the running back position where guys are getting playing time because of injuries or this, that, and the other thing, that investing that real high capital into a running back, you know, it's good for the short term, but we're not seeing running backs last for 6-7 years. I mean, Saquon Barkley's in year 7 and like he's had injuries and stuff like that. And it's an interesting pivot the way that the NFL's gone. And it really is about the young receiver and trying to build your roster that way, just because, you know, the longevity most likely is going to be there and they're a more valuable asset in the long term. And it's the same thing for me with tight end. Like I don't mind investing in young tight ends because I think up until recently, they've been pretty affordable. And, you know, Tyler referenced that, you know, I don't really trade up for players. Like, it's not my MO, but I was all in on Laporta. I moved up in 3 or 4 leagues to acquire him and it worked out, which is awesome. But that's typically not my MO to move up for players that I really like. And I, you know, me and my dynasty journey has been, I've been successful in dynasty, but it's been doing the same kind of thing and being consistent. And it's really finding things to take me out of my comfort zone and do things a little bit differently, A, because it's fun, and B, I'm adding different tools into my tool belt that I didn't have before. And now if I did that move and Laporta didn't work out long-term, that's okay. Like, I learned from that, like we talked about earlier, and we've all had moves like that. Like, there's been players that, like, you know, we joke on the pod that in 2017, I drafted Samaje Perine over Alvin Kamara in a dynasty league, which is true. And, you know, and it's like, all right, what did I get wrong in my eval here? Like, you know, and looking at that and learning from it. And that's really what I think some dynasty managers will get frustrated because we are in such a society that everything is, they want that instant stimulation. They want to win now. But dynasty is a game of patience. Like, you have to, you know, a lot of people say 3-year windows for your dynasty team, but it's, you have to kind of garden your dynasty team and watch it grow. And then you got to trim it back a little bit for it to grow again. And that's the thing with dynasty that I love. You know, I came from redraft and I really enjoy redraft for the fun of it. But for me, it wasn't enough. It was all about, like, dynasty is feeling like a general manager. And then all the different formats I play in, salary cap leagues, contract year leagues, like all sorts of really fun formats where I can feel more in control and I can build a team the way that I want to build it and rebuild it if I need to. So that's one of the things that, like, when it comes to valuing players. And, you know, for me, I've been on this kick lately, and, you know, Superflex is the biggest explosion we've seen in the format recently in the last handful of years. So for me, like, we did a startup a couple of years ago and I was like, you know what? I am not going to go QB QB. I'm going to do something different. I'm going to wait. I'm going to take year one, year two players and build a roster that way. Now, I haven't won this league, but I've been in the top three for the last 3 years. And my only starting quarterback is Tua Tagovailoa. My second quarterback on that roster is Jameis Winston. But my roster is so deep. I've got McCaffrey. I've got, you know, I've got Jamar Chase. I've got like Tony Pollard. I've got really good players top to bottom at the positions. But it's one of those things. It's like, for me, it was like, let me try this strategy and see how it works. It's not a high money league or anything like that. But I'm considering it, like, with some of my rookie drafts this year, like, where I'm okay at quarterback. And I'm like, you know what? Like, I have the 104. Like, it, history is going to tell me to take a quarterback with that pick. But it's like, all right, if I can get Malik Nabers and I start him every week, like, what if Drake May doesn't start? Or what if, like, he's not effective? Like, what if he has a Bryce Young type of year? Then, like, I'm going to have to wait, versus Nabers, I think, is a better prospect overall. So for me, it's in super flex leagues, it's building the depth at positions other than quarterback, which is kind of pivoting away. I actually traded a couple of quarterbacks in that league this year. You know, early in the season, someone needed a starter. I traded Jimmy Garoppolo for a third round pick and Rashee Rice. That worked out well. You know, right. Rashee Rice obviously started to ascend in the second half of the season. I traded Jared Goff and a package with Goff and a couple of other players and got Garrett Wilson back. Cause I was like, you know what? This is a buy low window on Garrett Wilson. And I already have Jamar Chase on that roster. Like, so making moves like that is like, all right, who would I rather have long-term? Like, Goff's a good solid QB too, but, or would I rather have a top five wide receiver in dynasty for the next handful of years?
Well, right? I think the only thing you need to do is, so you've established that this league likes to pay four yep. quarterbacks
oh,
in trades. So yep. you just have to weigh out value of owning, say, a Nabers versus mm-hmm. value of trading a May in right. 6 months or, yep. you know, 3 months, whatever that, or at the end of next year, whatever that looks like. It's whether you're investing in trade capital or whether you're investing in rookie capital. It really what you have to decide. Because if you were in a league where a super flex league where basically everybody was pretty set with their quarterbacks and were only adding rookies as, you know, security and depth, and there wasn't an active right. trade market, that would impact your decision. It would be easy to go with the rookie and take the wide receiver. But again, league context is so important to
100%.
Almost every decision that's made regarding draft capital or trade potential or strategies that you try to implement during the course of a year.
Yeah, and it's one of those things, like, all the leagues that I'm in are all very unique, which is one of the things that I really love with how many roster spots you have. Just, again, we talked about different managers. I mean, there are some managers that carry over from league to league. That happens, and that's good to have, but it's also good to have, like, that wildly different set of managers, too, because when you make those notes, like, there's certain people I know that value – picks more than they do players. And, like, I want to use that to my advantage, especially if I'm, like you said, you know, that win now team. I mean, you can go out this year and acquire guys like Stephon Diggs, Tyreek Hill, Davante Adams, Keenan Allen, relatively cheap. I mean, mm-hmm. you're looking at anyone outside of Hill, you could probably get for an early second round pick at this point. And those guys are all still very productive players. You know, Tyreek would probably cost you a little bit more. But even that, I mean, you're looking at a late first for Tyreek probably. And if you're on a win now team, you probably have a late first anyway. Like, give me Tyreek Hill over Brian Thomas Jr. for this year.
Yeah. Like, or Franklin or.
Yeah. Guys like that. So that's the kind of thing is that I think a lot of dynasty managers will get caught up on the shiny new toy and hoping that it's going to hit. But as someone that's played dynasty for a while, I am more in the class of like, all right, if I can get a proven asset, I'm more risk averse. Tyler is the opposite of me. He will take the risk. He will trade the established player for a rookie and you know, hopefully it works out. Where me, I'm like, all right, I know Tyreek Hill is going to score me 300 plus points versus the Brian Thomas Jr. Depending where he gets drafted, he might have 500 yards receiving and 4 touchdowns. Like, give me Tyreek for a couple of years. And then, you know, maybe Brian Thomas becomes a thing. That's the price that you pay. And you can't beat yourself up over that because, you know, the championships is why we play the game. And, you know, that's what you always want to don't lose that in the back of your mind. I think a lot of dynasty managers will. They try to win a championship, but they just do it in a way where they're always building, always building, always building, always building. And it never pays off. I think
so. I see you guys are talking about me.
To pivot. No, you win plenty of leagues. They missed that window to pivot to take a real. I think the hardest thing for dynasty owners is to take a realistic look at their roster. Like step outside of your comfort zone, zoom out and take a look at your roster and be like, what do I really have here? And that's what I did in UDPL is like, what are my options here? I found players that all have sell windows now. Josh Dobbs, you know, guys like that. Like, he's hot right now. I can sell him and get something back for him. You know, in a super flex league, you're like, oh, this quarterback's performing. But realistically, like, he's been cut by, like, 5 teams. Like, what is the NFL told you what he is. He's not a franchise quarterback. He's a fun story that's doing well right now. You need to capitalize on that. So yeah. In every league that I had Dobbs on, I moved off of him.
You know, you talked about being risk averse. I think for me, and I think what every goal of every dynasty player should be as they gain experience and, you know, get comfortable making trades is kind of like a light dimmer switch. You really need to, and it's really based on league activity. If you are in an active league that allows you to pivot and compensate for a bad decision, you can digest as much risk as you want because you're going to be able to dig yourself out of that hole. But if you are in a league that isn't active, that doesn't drive a lot of trades, you have to kind of weigh that each trade becomes more vital to your success. And it's like, for me, it's like I said, it's a light dimmer switch. I dial it back. I would become much more risk averse in a league that doesn't have a lot of transactions during the course of the year. Then if I'm in a league full of Tylers, then I'm not even giving it a second. I'm not even giving it a second thought because if I miss on this trade, I'm going to make 6 other ones and it's going to be okay.
With me alone.
Well, yeah. Probably. Well, in those
quiet leagues, you just need at bats. And if you don't have at bats, that bad trade is going to just sit in your gut and you're going to be like, I can't get out of this because I can't move.
And like, you know, yeah, I agree. And what I would say, Tyler, is I think you're wonderful in a league because you're a walking, breathing trade catalyst in your own right, which is important. Yes. I talk a lot about making deals with the deal makers. If you're going to invest your time in Dynasty, then you don't want to send out a bunch of offers to people who don't respond. You don't want to send out a bunch of offers to people who have to win every deal by a landslide just to get something done.
Now, if they're one person, it's the absolute worst. It's worse than worse.
Yeah. But usually there's a handful of those folks, right, in your league. But there's always 1 to 3 folks that are deal makers. They love to trade. Mm-hmm. And so what I always advise is, don't get locked on a particular player in a tier. Look at rosters in your league and find a correlating player in that same tier that's on a roster of someone who likes to trade. Because if you get locked in on a player necessarily, and it's a manager that's just extremely difficult to deal with, you can cut out so much frustration by picking either one above or one below in that tier and going after a Tyler and saying, hey, man, what can we do to get this done? As opposed to, you know, chewing off your nails trying to get this one particular player because that's who you identified.
Yeah. No, I completely agree. And it's nice that I am now a known, like, I'm the head of a, how can I describe this?
The Trader Tyler Union? I don't know.
Yes, like I started my own union.
It is nice.
It's a movement.
I love trading. All right. And honestly, like, if you're in Dynasty, you're doing it to trade. Like, that's the reason why you started. It's because then you can build your own team. It's like Madden. It's like franchise mode. You get to make all these moves. What I don't get is the owners that are like, I'm going to hold. I'm not trading anything. I'm just here. The thing with Dynasty that ruins it is the non-traders.
Yeah. So I think too, context matters here, because I can tell you there are plenty of managers out there who, when they are rebuilding, trade like fanatics and don't trade well. And when they are in contention, lock up and never trade a thing.
Yes.
There's a lot of folks like that, and identifying that and knowing what their rosters look like helps you as you start to craft deals, because you can't just say, well, wait a minute, we traded 2 years ago, we made 9 trades. Well, yeah, but 2 years ago they were rebuilding. Now they're not. And it's a whole different philosophy. Some folks just don't have the confidence. And we talked about trade calculators. That's where trade calculators come in and can add a layer of confidence to some folks who aren't. And some folks just, you know, that having the ability to flip that switch and hit accept, or hit send, it has to be so one-sided that there's just no doubt in their mind that they're going to come away with feeling good about themselves when they complete the deal.
So my last thing I will say in this podcast is, I think a lot of the people, whenever they have a bad trade, they kind of freeze. They don't want to trade anymore. I've known lots of people, especially in home leagues, where if they make a bad trade, you probably won't trade with them. And my advice to that is, it is a game. It's supposed to be fun. If you are getting anxious about trading in Dynasty, maybe you should step back and think about the Dynasty game itself. Maybe redraft is where you should be, because Dynasty right. should be fun. And it might, like, I used to, like you guys said, it would take me a week and a half if I made a bad trade. I would let it eat at me.
Oh, you'd beat yourself up bad.
I would. And what, Doug, lately, the past couple years, I've been like, oh well, it is what it is. Like, that's how you got to kind of feel. Like, yeah, you miss,
you're gonna
out,
win
but,
some, you're gonna lose some. Yeah. Like, you're not gonna win every trade. That's, and if you have that mentality, that's your first fault, is like, you think you're gonna win every trade. Like, yeah,
the worst is beating yourself up. That, never do that, because you will let it eat at you, and Dynasty it's not fun anymore. Yeah. And then you start kind of being like,
it eats away at that confidence, because you need confidence, yeah. like in Dynasty. Like, you know, I think that I make trades, or try to make trades, where if I feel confident about a certain player or draft position and stuff like that, and like, yeah, I feel confident in that. Like, I'm going with my gut. I'm taking the data, the information in front of me, and trying to make a move strategically. Like, and you know what? That isn't always perfect. But if I follow my process and I make a mistake, so be it. Like, yeah. It's not like I try to flip it around and like course correct it. Is like, you know what? The thing with Dynasty is, and we talked about it a little bit while you were gone, is that things take time. You may trade for a player now and like, you know what? I lost that trade. But guess what? A year later, yes. maybe you traded for a Nico Collins and you're like, man, he's just not that great. And then look what happens in year 3 with Nico Collins. Now you're like, man, now that I look back at that trade, I won that trade. So it's all about, we talked about, like, you know, the society that we're in is all they want gratification now. And yeah. really the part about Dynasty is, the reason we play Dynasty is because it is the long game, as much as it is trying to win now. Like, there's a fine line of what you're trying to do. And, you know, there might be a trade that you're like, man, I lost that one pretty bad. Like, I traded for Jordan Love 2 years ago and he rode the bench, and now he's like QB8 in Dynasty. And you're like, oh, wow, look what I gave
now
up.
Now you are talking about me.
Right. I gave up Sam Darnold when he was starting, and I don't know, like a wide receiver that's not in the league anymore. And now you're like, oh, now that I look back on what I gave up, I really won that trade. But for 2 years, you were like, man, Jordan Love's just eating a roster spot on my team.
Yep. And I just lost my train of thought. Go ahead.
No, that's all good. Yeah, I mean, that I think that's all I got. But Leo, if you could go back in time and talk to your Dynasty self when you first started playing Dynasty, outside of the notebook stuff. What is the thing that the older Leo would tell the younger Leo now?
Run. No.
Don't play so many leagues.
Yeah, right. Pretty much.
Yeah, that's an advice I'd give myself when I was an 18 was, hey, don't
get
join
over
it.
Your skis a bit. Yeah.
Don't join them.
I guess what I would tell my younger self is every interaction is an opportunity to either build or burn a bridge, because there were plenty of times early on in his journey where I thought I was the smartest person in the room, and I had to make sure the person I was dealing with knew I was the smartest person in the room. And so there were plenty of times where I took somebody and dragged them around the room and said, how could you put that offer together? That's terrible. You know, what are you even thinking? I certainly was a lot more aggressive in my responses, not realizing that that just isn't the way to build longevity in Dynasty. I think your goal is to be a shrewd, savvy trader, but a fair trader. Someone who is quick to open up dialogue, who responds quickly, someone who no one else, the other 11 or 13 owners or however many you have, whatever size league you're playing in, none of those other managers ever have hesitation to reach out to you, to ask for advice, to ask for potential trade negotiations, for player values, because one, there's always something you can glean from that discussion. Even if you're not involved in negotiations, you can understand how they evaluate. You can understand mm-hmm. how they rank, how they certain positions they value. Those are all, it's all information that potentially you can use to craft the deal down the road. And the other thing is, it's just better to build camaraderie and have a feeling of, again, building bridges as opposed to lighting the room on fire. Too often this community is too quick to take a flamethrower and just roast everybody, whether yep. it's because somebody makes a bad tweet or somebody makes a bad evaluation, somebody, you know, tells you to, you know, there's no reason to even put Puka Nacua on your roster. He's not going to be anything. And then we'll drag that player, that potential person around the room for how could you have been that short-sighted? What? There's just too much of that. I mean, I think yeah. everyone needs to be accountable. I'm not trying not to get on a soapbox here. Everyone sure. needs to be accountable. We're giving advice. We're trying to help yeah. folks. If we're not very good at it, that comes into question. We need to be accountable. That yep. said, we also need to build the community, be positive, and there's just so much negativity. People make mistakes. We talked about that earlier, right? A miss isn't failure.
If there was someone that was perfect, there wouldn't be a billion fantasy football podcasts.
Yeah, we would only need one.
Right.
Yeah, right.
So exactly. That's my advice. I would travel back and I would say, you know what? Tone it down. Be more approachable and be more supportive just into the community in general.
Show some humility.
Let's turn back time and go to Twitter, which is what it was called then, in 2017, when, say,
you had a tweet. No.
Say, Zach Reed and I, instead of Zach is somebody that I trust with information, we would be tweeting back and forth in a friendly manner of being like, hey, why do you see this? I don't see it. Why do you? And it makes you better by going back and, like you said, looking at the tape, looking at the player in a different set of eyes than your own. And maybe you saw the same opinion. That's fine. But it doesn't mean like you have to go on Twitter again and be like, hey, you're completely wrong. I went back and watched. And we are not professional scouts. Nobody on Twitter is professional scouts. It doesn't matter if you went to Scouting Academy, unless you're an actual NFL scout. Then you can maybe talk to me, but nobody's a professional scout. This is why Doug said we don't need one fantasy site. We need multiple, because take who you want to listen to. If you want to listen to us, fine. Hey, we've gotten some right. If you want to go to Leo, you know, he's old as hell. He knows a lot about football.
He had Tony Eason on his fantasy.
Thank you.
Bart Starr was his turn. Bart Starr was a starting quarterback in a super flex league. Yes.
Settle down. And
no. it's fun to get information. I listened to probably 8 to 10 different podcasts. And you know what? I may not take information from them, but I enjoy listening to it. Just be like, wow, okay, they think that. Like, it's something that is a hobby to me still. And you need to just enjoy it. Like, that's my main thing. And if trading should be fun, that's
I agree 100%. You know, and I think that's a perfect segue, because one of the things I wanted to do when I came on tonight is, you know, there's so many sites available, there's so much content available, and every day there's more, right? Every day there's a new team showing up, a new group starting a podcast or a content site. And but there's a couple that stand out to me, and that I think they're not huge, but they get, you know, they're growing, and I think they do things the right way. You know, I love your podcast. I was really happy to come on and share this time with you. Couple others, right? So there's a couple big dogs that I think do it right, that have really good culture and really do it well. And that's Football Guys and DLF. I think they both do a really good job. There's some smaller sites though, so that are grow, like I said, that are growing, that I think really bring their A game. I think JWB Fantasy Football does a tremendous job. Wyatt, Skyler, and the team over there, Mike, they do. They
yeah,
just
Wyatt's
do a,
good people.
I they do a really good job. And so I want to give them a shout out. I think the Undroppables do a good job. I think that's a really good site. A lot of good discussion, strategy perspective. I think the guys at that site do a great job. I think Destination Devi does a good job and pushes out some good content.
I love Ray. Like
Ray does and his tools on his site are excellent.
Ray has, in my opinion, a brilliant mind, and he's somebody that he knows how to say that he was wrong, and also when he's right, he doesn't get in your face about it, but he tells you the process of why he said what he said when he was right. Like, that's my favorite part about it, is you listen to Wake Up, and he will say, like, hey, you know, I told you guys this time, this is what I saw, this is what I was seeing, and hey, we hit it here. And my favorite part, he's like, hey, we hit it here. We didn't hit this guy. But, yeah, going on sites, I got to give Dynasty Nerds a shout-out, too. I know they're a larger site in this industry. For me, Rich is somebody that we've met in person, and he is, he'll tell you that he's hit, but he deserves it, in my opinion, because he's been right a lot. And I love their tools there. DLF McDowell, he's got a long line of just history. I think he's only like 5 years younger than you, so I think he had Frank Tarkenton as his first quarterback. Minnesota guy. I'm sorry.
You're killing me, man.
I'm not old shaming. No, it's okay. I used to work at a nursing home. It's okay for me.
You change your bedpan out real fast.
I got very good at that. I can even help you play bingo.
You're killing me, man.
I hope not. I could help you. I could come take care of you.
Hospice. I appreciate that. Thank you. dude. The last site that I had on my list that I wanted to mention, and he just came out with his rookie guide today, is Dynasty Island. I think they're doing a lot of good stuff in this community, and his rookie program came out today. He dropped it. And then the guy that I work with, Kevin Coleman, he's at Football Guys, and him and a few others, Jeff Bell, they run the Devi Royale.
Jeff is good patron people, too.
Yep, they run the Devi Royale patron site. And if you're ever into Devi or consider Devi, and or you just even want some really good dynasty information, I can't say enough good things about them. So again, I just wanted to take a minute tonight and just kind of talk about some of the folks that I think are doing a really good job, and they're doing it right, because too often, you know, you kind of step on other people to get to where you want to go. And, and I'm not saying the others that I haven't mentioned are doing that, but the bottom line is these guys are doing it right.
Yep.
So I wanted to give them a shout out.
And one other person that's been doing it for a very long time, Nick Whalen, who is so deep in the film, and he's actually coached, he's assistant coach. Like, he he's a great football mind. I met him in person, and if you start anything about football, I mean, you're sitting by him for an hour and a half just looking at his handsome face. It's ridiculous.
Sure, you call me old.
Garoppolo of the dynasty. Yeah.
Pretty much.
Call me old and call Nick handsome. We're all right.
And for anyone, you know, I have a lot of respect for anyone in this space and the people that are grinding, because it is a grind. And a lot of times it's not about the money. It's about the love of doing what you do. I've been there. I've co-owned a website. I've had multiple podcasts. I've written articles. It is a grind. So I respect anyone that does it, because at the end of the day, they do it because they really, really love it. Especially yeah. Zach, our friend.
No, it's seriously, if you don't listen to the
Dynasty Dummies, the
yes,
Hootenanny.
Zach's written speeches of players. That's what I like to call them. They're pretty much like speeches, monologues. They're insane.
So
like
good.
it's almost like Edgar Allan Poe-esque. Not with the dark style though, but he is so good at writing. And even my dumb self understands everything completely. It's like he's speaking into my soul when he does it. And plus you get J. Mike's sultry tones.
Oh, he's deep, huh? He's good. And you know,
our hot take specialist, J. Mike.
Yes.
What I'll say about Zach is that, you know, Zach and I are friends. We, you know, we've gotten together many times, and
same hairstylist.
My son thinks he's my younger brother, that we were separated, separated growing up, and
23andMe test incoming.
Yes.
Seriously, he's amazed. It's like Zach and I, when we get together, because we usually go and hang out probably, 3 hours, 4 hours early before the draft up in Boston, yep. The fishbowl yep. draft. And we go and the three of us hang out, my son and Zach. And Zach and I'll finish each other's sentences. And,
that's cute.
You know, it is. It's almost like we're a married couple. But he's just such good people. I mean, probably out of, if I had to, I wouldn't ever want to do this, but if I had to rank all the people I've met through this community, Zach, I just know that if anything were to ever happen, he would be at my front door tomorrow offering to help with whatever I needed. I mean, it's
yep.
really, and he's talented. I mean, just competing against him.
I mean, did you hear that Scott Fishbowl song today? Like, come on now.
Yeah. Not only is he artist creative.
He's
talented.
He's the Weird Al of the dynasty space, which is amazing. I love Weird Al.
But he just his evaluations, he's so accurate. When I referred to multiple times throughout this show about, people's voices that I trust when it comes to evals and who I go to validate my own or to double check my work, Zach is at the top of the list because he is so good at what he does.
So it was 2000 when Jefferson came out? Jefferson.
2000.
Justin Jefferson.
Leo actually knew Thomas Jefferson. I don't know if he knew that.
I was going to say, he was in a league with him.
Yeah.
He's actually, is one of his black books. He's got.
Red Grange was in the league.
Trade eval with Thomas Jefferson.
So the picture of the Last Supper really isn't the Last Supper. It was a draft. It was a football draft.
Yes. Leo's at the end of the table. You can't really see him because he dropped his napkin on the floor. So he had to pick it up.
Right. Had all the notes on it.
Yeah. But Zach and I were, right there with Jefferson, and everybody had
just
other
slot receiver.
Everybody else was like, yep, slot receiver. Oh, he's failing. Zach and I'd go to Zach and be like, how are people not seeing what we see? Like even J Mike loved Jefferson. And that was like one of those proud moments. Cause I started, podcasting at the same time, but he's one of those people that if he agrees with my evaluation, I get pumped, and that person goes up a little bit for me just because we agree on the same mm-hmm. player. And it's like, okay, this guy agrees with me. I'm going to bump him up because it's almost like a 90% lock. He might hit. He will hit. He sure is hitting, right? 90% of the time works every time.
So 65% of the time works every time, but I'll take it.
If anybody wants, anybody that's listening, I'm sure most of the listeners are familiar with Zach's work, but if they're not, just, go on Twitter and or X and look up Dynasty Dummies and look for the rookie Hootenanny and watch the videos because they're fantastic.
It's worth definitely worth your time, 100%.
Yeah.
So, well, with that said, I think we are going to wrap it up. Leo, thank you for spending so much time with us. Let us know where we can find you, what you got going on. Pump, this is your time to take the stage and pump whatever you got going on to the masses.
Yeah, not a lot. The only thing I really have going That's on okay. right now is every 2 weeks, Kevin Coleman and I get together and we do a podcast called Deciphering Dynasty, where we really dig in and kind of look at the contextual nuances of strategy, how to apply, just different, just the practical application and the execution of what it looks like in a league going through it and trying to peel back the layers so that, and we take a lot of questions and look for viewer content, you know, just what do they want us to dive into next? It's a lot of fun. We usually spend about an hour and I think there's some value in it and the responses have been really positive. So you can find that on Devi Royale channel, YouTube channel. And like I said, it's every other Thursday. It's not this week, but we'll be going live next Thursday at 9 p.m. Eastern time. And nice. So that's where you can find me. Hopefully we'll pick up some new followers that can stop by and take a look and gain something from it.
Yeah, and make sure you follow Leo on X too. It's at Ciga, C-I-G-A underscore F-F. He's got, you know, he drops these threads from time to time, which are always worth going through. Like it's like the mind of Leo and boom, 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 boom. And I love those because to me, that's what I came to Twitter for, was content like that. Like, I want to know, I don't want the, like, this guy sucks or his foot speed's bad. Like, give me some more in-depth stuff. And that's, I don't post much on Twitter just because I'm more of like, I take all the information in. I'm like a sponge.
It's more of a spies through the window type guy.
Yeah. So when I see stuff like that, that's what I really was like, oh, I sit down and I take the time to read through because that's the kind of content that I look for personally. I don't need that, that instant gratification of like, oh, his hands are bad or whatever. Like, I want to dig deep and find that kind of stuff. So thank you for coming on. I appreciate it. Oh, we've got a late question. Favorite player. Who's your favorite player, Leo? Who do you like watching? Who's your favorite player?
Get your Wikipedia ready, people.
Well, of all time, it's a toss up between Earl Campbell and Bo Jackson. Of all time.
Oh, you're right. My boy, my Bo Jackson stuff. It's in that. Yeah. It's in the other side of the man cave over here. I've got
all right. So we'll give
stuff.
You two. Doug, you give me two.
I mean, my all time favorite player is Bo Jackson. Like, it's not even the best athlete of all time. You can't debate this with me. Like, he is God's gift to athleticism is Bo Jackson. My favorite current player. I've always been a big DeAndre Hopkins guy. I know he's getting older, but I've always loved watching DeAndre Hopkins play.
All right. Mine, Julio Jones, one of my all time favorites, Atlanta Falcon guy, but just watching him was awesome. And my other one is a little more recent too. People aren't going to be happy. Adrian Peterson. People say don't go to games. Well, I went to go see week one against the Falcons at the Metrodome. I saw Adrian Peterson's first touchdown, and I looked at my friend that I was with, and I said, he's special. Like, it was, he bobbled it, and it was like a horse taking off towards the end zone. It was the speed he had and the power that he ran with. It was... We were very lucky to watch him. Like Bo Jackson, we were very lucky to be able to see him play. I wasn't able to because I wasn't into football then, but Adrian Peterson.
The biggest what if in history is
and
what if Bo Jackson never got hurt. Right?
My runner-up is definitely Randy Moss because if you live in Minnesota, Randy Moss has to be there.
Yep. No, those are all great answers. And my favorite number is 34 just because of Bo. And obviously you like Earl and Bo, so... 34 is in Ortiz and Paul Pierce and yeah, all that stuff. So yeah, I love Bo. I was actually able to meet him at a show and he was super nice, very kind to me when I met him, which was really cool. And I shook Adrian Peterson's hand at a show.
Did he crush it?
Oh my God. So I've shook the hands of athletes before and you always hear about Adrian Peterson's grip is crazy. So when I went in for the handshake after he signed my football, I was prepared for it. I'm like, what is it? And without it, like effortless, like just a, like a vice. And I was like, oh my God.
Yet he fumbled the ball a lot.
His hand strength out of this world. And he was a super nice guy too. Yeah. Really nice. Really nice. The only athlete I've met that was a jerk was Michael Irvin, but that's a whole nother story. Everyone else has always been very, very nice, which is cool. So yeah. So again, thank you, Leo, for coming and joining us. It's been a pleasure to have you. I hope to see you in July at Scott Fishbowl Draft. Even if I'm not in the Scott Fishbowl, I'm coming anyway. I'll do a board for whoever's division wants me to do it. I don't care.
I'm right there with you, Doug.
Yeah, I'll be there. If I'm in it, great. If I'm not, I'm still going to attend because I like to hang out with you. I like to see your son and Zach and, you know, Kevin, all the people that are there every year. It's nice to have that one big event every year to look forward to. And then we're in a redraft league together, which hopefully gets to be in person again. Hopefully, I know it's just hard scheduling all these adults with kids and all these travel schedules. First world problems.
Are either of you guys going to the expo this year?
I want to.
We'll see.
The timing is a little tough for me. August is always a challenge. So we'll see. Yeah. I went 2 years ago and I really, really enjoyed it. I got to meet Tyler for the first time. I met James, Shane Manila stayed with us. That was an adventure. and I got to meet J Mike for the first time and I almost kissed Gabe on the lips.
I still feel J Mike's hug.
Yeah. Well, I've never been. So this year I've already booked
it's very
the room
fun.
And bought the tickets. Nice. So this will be my first year going.
It is an absolute, and it's only getting bigger since we went 2 years ago. I was looking at the itinerary and I was like, man, they're up their game. They've got all sorts of stuff going on at the Hall of Fame now. Like it's a big deal. So I'm gonna try to make it. I will let you know. I'll reach out
please.
To you.
Yeah, please. Hopefully you guys can go. I'd love to see you both.
Yeah, that would be awesome. So once again, thank you for joining us. This has been Dynasty Happy Hour with Tyler Gunthiner, Leo Pasiga, and me, your host, Doug. We will see you next week when we talk about some combine.
And free agents.
And free agents. So much stuff.